When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up!
Wake up! Wake up!
WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up War Chant,
presented by
the vitamins.
Now here's WarChant.com's Aslan Hudjavandi
and Corey Clark.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing breath. Although I am black.
Wake up! It's Wake Up War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy. Coming up on today's show. The Noles still alive in Omaha, and they do it in a way that makes you fall back in love with college athletics. Do they have another ace up their sleeve to keep things going in the College World Series? And the latest edition of the War Chant preseason top 40. Wake up, War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy, vitaminenergy.com, promo code WARCHAMP, BOGO, WARCHAMP, B-O-G-O. Buy one, get one free. All varieties on the table, Immune Plus, Workout Plus, Hydration Plus, Focus Plus, Mood Plus, it's all there for you. Go all in on one and get one for free, or get the variety packing and try all of them. VitaminEnergy.com, Florida State alums at the controls hooking you folks up with that promo code. Maybe a couple more wins that we can get, like Link Up can maybe be like the promo code. But I don't know, WarChant BOGO just rolls off the tongue so well, does it not, Corey Clark?
It does indeed.
WarChant.com, the ultimate seminal sports source. Hit the thumbs up, five-star rating and review. It's been a while since somebody left us a five-star review. Do that, please. Apple iTunes podcast app. Certainly would appreciate it. Always a nice gesture to see that your work is appreciated. But we appreciate you being here more than you would ever know. Corey Clark in the house. What's up, Corey? Let's go, man. Noles, baby. Woo!
That's right. That's right. They live to see another day, don't they?
Dude, if I could wax poetic real quickly, Corey, and I'll let you go, but
go. Let's do it. Let's hear it.
You know, we lamented the other day about this format, and it's...
I thought you were about to say we live in a cynical world. And just go down that path.
We do live in a cynical world where Corey doesn't have faith. I'm talking about the next game against Tennessee, and I've got faith in guys just being able to go out there and shove. And Corey's like, you're a crazy man. I'm like, Corey, just stop being too rational and practical, Corey. These guys are not robots. They're not going to always perform at their mean or their average. Sometimes these guys are going to hit their head on ceilings, and sometimes they're going to hit their butt on the floor. And, you know, Tuesday was guys hitting their heads on ceilings. And the thing is, with the way this format is, and fair or unfair, when you end up losing one of these games, whether it's your first game or your second game, because ask North Carolina, you got to find guys that probably haven't performed all that well to fill in significant gaps in a game. And, you know, we were joking about it. Like we were being serious the other day with Iron. We're like, how are they going to piece it together Tuesday? And we start convincing ourselves, start Connor Whitaker and then have him maybe be your opener and then get two from him and then three innings made from John Abraham and just hand the ball off and keep this thing going. And then we see Andrew Armstrong starting on Tuesday and you kind of go, man, we don't have a lot of data of late that makes you feel good about it. But I'm like, you know what? Screw it. This is the only way this is going to work out is a guy like Andrew Armstrong has to give you an out-of-body experience. And I think he kind of did, Corey, but then your nine-hole guy gets four hits. First guy to do that for your program at that stage since a guy named Buster Posey. And then on top of that, Connor Holtz goes 4 1/3 as well. And I think that's pretty much an out-of-body experience for him considering what he had to go through on Friday. It's just, it has to be, Corey, one of the most satisfying, honestly gratifying wins I can remember as a fan. I don't know what's going to happen to Andrew Armstrong. I think he's got another year of eligibility. Same with Connor Holtz. But, man, they can walk away from the game or walk away from this program, and that's how they're going to be remembered. And that's what makes this entire thing awesome. Because all that said, who knows what's going to happen later today. They might get their teeth kicked in against Tennessee. I don't care. They went from worst program or worst season in program history, Corey, to national semifinalists. I cannot be more happy, man. I really couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how we feel depending on how the game goes on Wednesday. Like, if they blow another lead, if they get trounced, or if they win.
Like, well, like, what do you expect? I mean, like, to muscle and grind back, man. Like, I'll be hurt.
This is what this team deserved. They didn't deserve an 0-2. they deserve to be remembered. I think no matter what happens today, they're going to be remembered. It's a pretty special run they put together out there. They've probably been the best team out there, mm-hmm. save for the last two innings against Tennessee. They've won. They're 2-1, and they took the number one team in the whole nation down to the final strike, and had a 3-run lead in the ninth. This particular Florida State team has played as well as any Florida State team has ever played out in Omaha through three games, ever. Maybe the 86 one. I don't know how strong that thing started, but that to go 2-1. They're now 7-1 in the postseason, and they're, like I said, their only loss was a 3-run blown lead in the ninth to the number one team in the country. So that's awesome, man. I am of the – you want to win a national championship. It will be disappointing if they lose today. It'll be disappointing if they lose tomorrow. It'll be disappointing if they lose on Monday in Game 3 of the championship series. No. But, man, it's just really cool that they reached this moment. They're one of the four teams left standing. The way – that game ended, one of the all-time heartbreaks in FSU baseball history. For them to come back and knock out two good teams, clearly they're good. They're in Omaha. One of them was a national seed. Was Virginia a national seed? I can't remember. Right?
No, they hosted, though. They were 16. They were top 16.
Yeah, and I think they ended up hosting the Super because somebody lost, right? Yeah. I can't remember. But anyway, to two ACC teams. Mm. But to do what they've done these last 2 days – and really, honestly, the way they played in the first game for a large portion of it, once they seemed to calm down, I think they got unlucky a little bit. Think they didn't play, they didn't make all the plays, but they played well enough to win, man. And that usually a Florida State team just completely melts down. And I know you guys might be thinking that Friday night thing was a meltdown, man. I don't know. A meltdown to me is like two errors in the ninth,
yeah.
three walks, a hit batter, a bloop that falls. A ball that should be caught that deflects off the glove. Like that, this was just major league hitters putting barrels on balls when they absolutely had to do it. Yeah. Like, you did make them earn their way on base. Even the ball that I think was the worst defensive play of the inning, the Diamez Ross play in center, yeah. it hit off the wall 400 feet away. Mm. Like, they put the barrel to the ball. So give them credit. That's a good team. You're going to see again today. But, man, what a response. What an answer. And I think as we move forward, no, you're not going to be moving forward with Tibbs and Ferrer and Cam Smith. I think this DNA of this team is kind of like this. I hope this carries over. I think it does, not just till next year, but this is kind of ingrained in what Florida State is. This is really impressive, man. It just is. It's not just the turnaround from last season to this season. It's the turnaround from an all-time heartbreaker to winning two games in a row. Giving yourself a chance, reaching the Final Four of the national tournament. That's a really cool accomplishment for someone in their second year. So kudos to them, man. That was fun to watch. And it was fun, as you mentioned, Holtz and Armstrong have been kind of awful. Armstrong, no doubt, has been awful. I just looked it up. Ira texted us these stats, and I just went back to the group text and saw it. In Armstrong's last 8 appearances – he had pitched 13 and two-thirds innings and given up 20 earned runs. He was averaging more than a run and a half per inning given up. Like, he was awful. He was unusable.
Inflated ERA, some people call it, right, Corey?
Yeah, that was Ben McDonald being kind. Like, yeah, Armstrong's got a little bit of an inflated ERA. Yeah, you think the 7 ERA is a little bit inflated, Ben? But for him to go out and do that, to get – and I know UNC isn't hitting it great – but you got 13 outs from Armstrong, which I don't know if you went into this College World Series, you thought you would get one out from him. Yeah. You got 13 from him. And then you got 13 more from Connor Holtz, who hadn't exactly been Billy Wagner coming out of the pen recently. For him to pitch the way he did, and for Armstrong to pitch the way he did, and like you said, Jackson West to do what he did, it does feel like, hey, man, see, Florida State can have some magic happen in Omaha, too. Those were magical performances by guys that had not been playing like that really all year. So that's cool. You hope you build on it. But even if you don't, what a cool day and what a cool win for that team.
Yeah, and these weren't contributions, not to diminish it, but like this wasn't a 24-4 win over UConn. Like,
right.
They needed Jackson West and his four hits. They needed Connor Holtz to go 4-1/3. They needed Andrew Armstrong.
They needed his
that.
Hit to hit off that wall.
Yeah, man.
There you go, like Jack Nicholson and a few good men.
Yeah. Because listen, like, you know, Cam Smith has had a pretty decent tournament, but he did not have a good Tuesday at all. James Sims has not had a great stint out there in Omaha. No. A little bit better day on Tuesday, but you didn't get really what you expected out of like 2, 3, 4, to a certain extent 5, but we're not going to say anything remotely negative about Jaime Ferrer on this show, everybody.
Yeah, Ferrer still had an RBI, bases loaded walk on a good at bat, and had a hit that was part of another rally. But yeah, I mean, you're right. 2, 3, 4, 5 weren't special on Tuesday, and you still put up 9 runs and won the game.
Yeah, so you feel like, you know, they'll get back on track, and you know you got to get some more miracles here. We'll talk about maybe what that looks like later today. But like, it was just to go back and kind of look at this game, maybe like on a more micro scale, Corey. But you know, Florce left 14 guys on base, and I was tracking the game as I was at the courthouse following along to the ACC FSU lawsuit thing. And you know, I think Cam had 2 guys on in the 6th and in the 5th inning. And you're like, all right, man, break this thing open. Like, you know, make this a real big splash of an inning, because they had 4 runs in that inning, Florida State. Then North Carolina comes back and gets 4 runs in the bottom half of it. Cam grounds out, and you're like, man, like that would have been really nice. And then the next inning starts off with James Tibbs hitting a freaking double. And you're like, oh, right. Like, you know, just if you're 1 batter away. Later on, I think it might have been the 7th inning. No, Ferrer struck out with the bases loaded. And the next inning starts off with Jackson West getting you a hit. And it just felt like they were so close, and that they were walking too fine of a line, like on the razor's edge, not being able to get guys across, that the bullpen wasn't going to be there. And it wasn't even going to be really fair to say the bullpen wasn't going to deliver for them, because they left 14 guys on base, but they got you 9 runs, so that should be enough. It still felt like it was teetering at all times,
yeah,
right? Like,
of course.
Nothing's ever a slam dunk with this team, so... You know, in hindsight, it's cool to celebrate these things. I guess we would like it if it was just a mercy rule was still in effect, but I'm starting to kind of come around to embracing the chaos almost, Corey, like embracing the fact that disaster is around every single corner. But let's just peek our head around and see what happens. Let's push Armstrong back out there. Let's push Holtz back out there and see what happens. And they're needing to do that again tomorrow, or today, rather.
Yeah, it'll be – I don't know what Link said after the game as far as who's going to be the starter tomorrow.
Don't ask me. I don't know. He said it again.
You know, I would think it would be Jamie Arnold.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's 4 days rest. He pitched on Friday.
But, like, he didn't look great against Tennessee, you know?
I mean, it's still Jamie Arnold. Like, and he threw 98 pitches. So he threw less than he has in any other start this year. So, I mean, I feel like...
I think, yeah, wait out. I think you need another miracle today, Corey. But
you look, man, if you throw out a Tejada... No. Or I don't even know
Abraham.
Who you throw out.
I think
Abraham, you're losing the game. Like, okay. Your only chance, in my opinion, and it's just a chance, is you got to go with your guys. You got Arnold and Dorsey lined up on 4 days rest. Usually they pitch on 5 days rest, so maybe you cut them an inning.
Corey, they go Friday to Friday, Saturday to Saturday all season long. You know?
Well, right, but you know, there were some times where they would pitch on a Friday and then a Thursday because of the weird schedule. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're
right. Or a game would be rained out. Yeah. So they would pitch, they'd have to pitch on Saturday to pitch again on a Friday. Like, that stuff kept happening all year. So a lot of times they were working on 5 days rest, not 6. So this would be up a day, maybe 2 days. But you know, yeah, you're probably, I would think you know you have to pitch Jamie Arnold in one of these 2 games.
Yes, I
so
agree.
So the thought is, okay, if we can somehow get to Thursday with Arnold on the mound.
Yes.
Well, now you got a real you got a real chance here, and I feel like Tennessee would get a little tight.
Yes.
The same time, I'm a cynic, I'm a negative Nelly, whatever you want to call me. This is the number one team in the country, man, and they are locked and loaded with their pitching staff, which is 3rd in the country, or 4th, well, it was until it played Florida State, in ERA. Like, this is one of the best pitching staffs in America, a ton of bullpen arms. They're ready, they're rested and ready, and they're going to fire all their bullets at you, and if you come out with a Joe Charles and a John Abraham, I don't know that that's the way you get to the weekend. To me, the way you get to the weekend is Arnold and Dorsey, and take your chances that they're both good. It would just be a shame that you play, what would you end up playing, 4 games in Omaha, and Arnold only 4 games over 5 days, 6 days, whatever it is, and Arnold only pitches 1. and that's a loss. But I get it. Like, this is how it works. This is how college baseball works. This is how this stupid event works. They're still in trouble. It's still a huge uphill climb. But what they did get is Holtz and Armstrong gave them 26 outs that they couldn't have imagined they were going to get. Mm-hmm. So they do have a lot of fresh arms out there. Their arms aren't as good as the ones in the other bullpen come today, but they're fresh. Maybe Joe Charles can give you a 3 1/3 with one run. Maybe the wind is blowing straight in. Maybe things like that happen where you have a chance. So but you have to pitch Arnold one of the two games. You can save them to Thursday, but then you might not get to Thursday. So that's all the calculus that's going on in Link Jarrett's head. I get I'll understand the decision either way. I really will. Look, this is where Florida State is really hamstrung, not just because the bullpen isn't great at all, but they don't have really a third starter because he's been hurt for 3 months. Yeah. So if you had Cam Leiter on deck to go along with Arnold after him, well, number one, if you had Cam Leiter, you're probably in the winner's bracket. You're the one that's 2-0 because I think he probably would have pitched the last inning on Friday night. Yeah. But you don't, and you didn't. And so now you've got to figure out a way to somehow cobble together 27 outs to get to Jamie Arnold on Thursday. But again, that's kind of my issue with the whole event. Let's say you do miracle yourself to Thursday. You somehow beat the number one team in the country using your third and fourth and fifth best pitchers. Sixth best pitcher.
Yeah.
Then you get to Jamie Arnold on Thursday, and he pitches out of his mind, and you win. That is awesome. His season's over. You don't get to pitch him again. So the three biggest games of the season, potentially, you don't get to pitch your number one guy because you had to use him to get to the championship series in the first place. I think if you pitch him on Wednesday, he's theoretically available again on Monday in a game three to win the national championship. If you wait till Thursday, that's his season. So I think that's part of the calculus too, right, Aslan? Like, hey, yeah. Are we here to just beat Tennessee twice? Or are we here to win the darn national championship? Because if we want to win the national championship, we have to have Jamie Arnold pitching in the weekend. We have to have him pitching one of those three games. And to do that, he probably needs to pitch on Wednesday. And that would be – I mean, that's what major leaguers do. I know his arm isn't quite built up like a major leaguer, but that's what major leaguers do. They pitch on 4 days rest. And obviously, even if he does pitch, don't mean it's going to go well. Yeah. He gave up 6 runs to him. Yeah. So it ain't like it's an automatic 7 innings, 1 hit, 1 run. This is a really good lineup. And even when you're throwing your best, they prove they can hit him. So it's an uphill climb, man. But it's cool that Florida State still gets to be on the hill trying to climb it.
I just wonder, this is like almost me asking myself a question, but asking it to you to figure it out and solve it. But I wonder, like, how much more would I hope I get out of Jamie Arnold if I hold him until a winner-take-all game against Tennessee on Thursday versus starting him today? You know, like, that extra day sounds cool, but what does it materialize into, Corey? Like, 10 extra pitches? 15?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that worth it, you know? To your point.
I don't know. I think Link knows that stuff better than we do. I'm sure he knows all the numbers that Jamie, when he had 6 days rest versus 5 days rest. Right. And then, what that might look like if you knock it down to 4 days rest.
And then how it looks like if you throw him Wednesday and you're thinking Wednesday, Monday in a game three for the national title versus Thursday, Monday. Like, if he throws again on Monday, if he pitches Thursday, if he starts game one against Tennessee, you know, how much better off will he be in that Monday, if needed, game for the national championship versus, you know, there's permutations that are starting to come into my head that's probably a little too much, but I just, you might be right on this one. It might not be the juice or saving him for another day might not be worth not having that other day to live, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, this is why it's so hard to do what Florida State is trying to do. This is why nobody ever does it. 9% of teams do it. So I shouldn't say nobody ever does it.
17, actually, Corey. I did the math. 12 teams have done it all time, and there's been 76 college
World
Series.
But I saw the stat where it was like 4 of the last 43. I don't know what that line of delineation is when they start with the 43. Like, why they keep going back to, like, maybe they're just going back to 1980 to, like, make it modern, like the modern era. I don't know.
Or the tournament might have, the format might have changed at some point.
I guess. I feel like it's always been eight, but maybe it wasn't eight back in 1979 or 78.
There's a weird ladder. Like, if you look at Wikipedia and they show you the way the bracket used to look, like that 86 team, or like they went through like a weird path. It wasn't like a nice, like you have to like look around, like where do they go? They only lost one game. I know they didn't go home. Like, oh, they're down here on this side of the bracket going through this whole other kind of snake pit, if you will. So, but carry on. Sorry.
Yeah. So here again, I know I'm going to stop complaining. I probably won't. But my biggest issue with this format, and it's not just because Florida State lost. Would I be talking about this if Florida State was 2-0 and rested? Probably not. But there is a chance, because Florida State is going to be a pretty decided underdog on Wednesday. They're going to lose on Wednesday. Tennessee won't play again until Saturday, meaning at a baseball tournament, which is a sport that is played every day. By nature, that's the beauty of the sport, is it's played every day. Tennessee will have played 3 games in 8 days. That's stupid. That's a stupid way to run a sport, especially a sport like this. Like, you get more games in basketball. Like, a basketball team plays, you know, 3 games in 8 days in the NCAA tournament. A baseball team should be playing five or six. Now, again, that wouldn't be great for Florida State, right? Like, at least they give Arnold a chance with those two days off in between the last win and the game before that. But it's just dumb. I don't know how you do it other than like what they're trying to do today, right? Aren't they going to try to do? Trying to do an 11-3 games today?
Yeah, like I think I'm so 11-3 and 8 or something like that or whatever.
I mean, do that every day. Like, make it 3 games a day. Like, and I think maybe that's how it used to be. I don't remember. But Tennessee getting to the championship series, playing 3 games in 8 days is just dumb. That's not what this sport is intended to be. They also earned it. I want everybody to understand that. They won the game, and they won the next game. And it ain't like they sprung this format on the teams as the tournament was going on. We all knew the schedule. And it's just when you see it play out like this, you're like, this isn't what this sport is supposed to be. You're supposed to play every day. You're supposed to have to organize your pitching every day. But Tennessee, this is their third game in 6 days coming up, or 5 days, I guess. So they're going to – 6 days, right? I don't know how the math works. But they're going to be locked and loaded and ready to go. Florida State's playing their third game in 4 days. It's a huge difference. Even still, it's baseball. Florida State's one of four teams playing. It's awesome that they're still here. It's awesome that we get to talk about the College World Series again.
Absolutely.
Like, it's been so long, and they've won 2 games for the first time, I think, since 12,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So let's hope this fourth game goes better than that one did. But yeah, that's, by the way, a sneaky blown
yes
national championship.
Absolutely.
I think that 2012 team, I just wish Luke Weaver, it was Lee Brant and Compton, who I think were both freshmen, I want to say. And Luke Weaver was a freshman. He was better than both of them, but he didn't develop as quickly, and he didn't really get a chance to pitch in that series. It's fine. He wasn't ready, but he was
Gilly?
Awesome the next year.
Was Gilly on that team or no?
No, Gilly had left the year before. So
I think they had another, like, they had like three rock solid guys, I feel like. Well, I don't know.
Seitz was on that team. Yeah. Maybe Brian Bush. Does he count? I don't know. They had a bunch of guys that had thrown a lot of innings. But maybe Zerzow? Was Zerzow on that team? Or no, he was 17. But yeah, man, I think that I don't like the format, but Florida State kind of dug its own hole by losing that game against Tennessee. And that's what, if this miracle comeback doesn't happen, you'll always lament that, but I hope it doesn't overshadow in the moment how enjoyable this particular postseason run has been. The fact that they bounced back from, I mean, that look, there were three other walk-offs or really tough losses. Nobody had a tougher loss than Florida State.
Yeah,
I'm not sure there's been a tougher loss in Omaha.
They had the game won.
Yeah, I don't know that there's been a tougher loss in Omaha since the Arkansas kid dropped the pop-up.
Yeah.
Literally, that is a very, very tough loss because of the stakes and because of who you were playing and because this situation here. Like, instead of only having to win one more game, Florida State had to go win 4 more games. They've won 2 of them, though. Now you're back facing a team that you clearly shouldn't be afraid of, But they're not afraid of you either. And they're very, very good, and you're going to have to play very well for nine innings and then nine innings again to have any shot. But it is cool for this program. It is cool for this coach. It is cool for these players, especially the ones that were on that horrible team last year, to be able to be in this stage and get to play these types of games. It's neat that they're still doing this.
They had six guys that started games that year. Like, Lee Brandt started 19, Compton started 18, Scott Seitz started 13. So, yeah, he's the third guy I was thinking of. Peter Miller started 10.
Peter Miller. Forgot about him.
And Brian Bush started a game, too. So.
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah, they had some bats, but not as potent as this team, I don't feel like.
No.
This team is – they got something. And
by
feel
the
like
way, I did want to shout out, like, you know, they hit the home runs late. But let's see. Cantu had a great – RBI single with two strikes against a tough pitcher, man, mm-hmm. A tough lefty. I think it was the lefty that was in there. He stays inside the ball, rips a single to left. Then Lodies follows with a base hit. Farrow maybe follows with a base hit. Jackson West follows with a base hit.
I think
something
did.
Happened.
I think Lodies had the base
yeah.
hit.
Yeah, Williams had another hit. Williams, our man Max, had another three hits and a couple RBIs. Man, he is a force. He is going to be the star of the team next year, him and Marco. But it wasn't just the long ball. And I know we can lament they left all those runners on base. Well, that one inning against UNC's best guy, they strung together some incredible at-bats to get that 7-1 lead. And it proved to be just enough.
Yeah, fifth inning, Cantu, Lodies, West, Williams, single, 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 single.
Yeah, it was a little small ball, my man.
Yeah.
I will say this, I think against there was a play, so they got to do a little bit better base running. Like and I want to say this because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to me that are watching this. They watch the game that are listening to me now. Ferrer, he did not run the bases well on that pop up that landed Aslan. I don't even know if you got to see the play. It's early in the game. I think it's just 1-0. Maybe it's 0-0. He's on first. Cantu hits a little pop up over third where it's obviously going to be a tough play. It's in between the third baseman and the left fielder. It lands in front of him. The left fielder dives, and Ferrer only gets to second. And McDonald and Chris Burke were kind of hammering Ferrer. Like, hey, man, you need to be on third right there because the next guy, Lodies, had a ball to center that would have scored him. Now, Ferrer got a single after that, so Ferrer scored anyway. But, man, I know baseball enough to know, and I'm certainly not as savvy as two guys that played in the major leagues, but what Ferrer's problem was is he was almost running back to the bag like he was worried about getting doubled up, which clearly wasn't going to happen. But there's no way he's supposed to be a third on that. That ball, he didn't know the left fielder wasn't going to catch it, and then the third baseman got on it quickly. You're not running in and out at third right there. But it didn't look good that he was running back to the base, almost confused as to, you know, you got to be halfway right there or even a little more halfway. But he didn't make a terrible mistake. I just want to get that out because he kind of got killed on the broadcast for his base running. But they did. There were some things they didn't do great. Like, I'm trying to remember, Cantu hit a deep sack fly with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
And Marco should have and could have tagged up, I think, and gotten to third, and he didn't. It was like he was scared of Honeycutt's arm or something, but it was deep enough, and he's a good enough athlete. He should have been on third, and I think maybe he scores on another play. Like, there's little things like that. Cam Smith kind of didn't get rid of the ball quickly enough on a little slow roller again with a really fast kid running down the line. That needs to be an out. There's little things like that that just can't afford to happen these next 2 days, yeah, or you're not going to win. You know, they didn't make an error. They played pretty strong fundamental baseball by and large, but there were some things, especially on the bases, where you'd like them to maybe take an extra base when it's there.
All right. Well, let's get the third base coach. Is it Ty McGahey over there? Like, come on, tighten up. Talk to your guys, man.
I know he and Tibbs were having it seemed like they were having an extended conversation. There was a ball. Tibbs was in second after the leadoff double. And then Den just takes a first pitch, of course. It's just it's such bad luck. It's worse than striking out. He tries to check his swing, and the ball hits off his bat. Mm. It's I'm telling you, as a hitter, you'd rather swing and miss 100 times than that happen. You're checking your swing, and the ball's in fair territory going 12 miles an hour. It bounces over the pitcher. If Tibbs reads it initially, so the shortstop has to come in and make a play and then throw to first. Tibbs probably should have gotten a better read and gotten a third on that. So then he's at third with one out, which is ideal. But I think he ended up maybe scoring anyway. There's a couple things there where Tibbs didn't seem to be getting great reads on the ball. Oh yeah, because he was a second after that. Then a bloop landed and he didn't score.
But that one was legit though. That one might have been caught. I understand him not scoring on that one.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a little bit of bad luck there for Tibbs. But those are the things where you need to get good reads on the bases. You need to take an extra base when it's there. You need to not let a kid beat out an infield signal because you hesitate just a little bit too much or take it a little bit too casually. You need to run hard on a ground ball double play. Like, all those things need to happen for you to beat this juggernaut, because it is a juggernaut. Like, their lineup's better than yours by a smidge, but it is. Their pitching is better than yours. I think your defense is better than theirs, but overall, I think they're a better pitching team and they're a better hitting team. And they might be the only I think they are the only team in the country you could say that about, that they're a better hitting team than Florida State. But I think they are. I think they have a better lineup. It's close, but they do. But baseball's the beauty about baseball is, you know, bad teams beat good teams all the time. Well, these are two good teams, and good teams beat good teams all the time. You can beat this team. You can. Absolutely. You didn't, did you? You almost proved it. You were one strike away from proving it, but you could beat them, and you might have gotten that strike.
I think you proved you're better than them. Just because you didn't win doesn't mean you didn't prove you're better than them. So that's
certainly proved you can hang with them.
Yeah.
So that's what but no mistakes, no balls landing in front of you on little bloops to the outfield. You got to go make these plays. You got to take the outs that they give you. No free passes. Florida State was really good about that on Tuesday. I think they only walked two. Meanwhile, I think North Carolina walked 10. It was crazy, man. The one reliever basically walked the base. He did walk the bases.
Nine walks from.
Was it nine walks? Yeah. And I think Florida State had two, right?
Three. Each pitcher had one.
And Hultz's was in the last inning, and part of that was a pitch clock.
Yeah,
violation.
Ridiculous.
That's a weird thing that happened there. But anyway, so just putting it out there, it's an uphill climb. It's not impossible, but you've got to play your best baseball, and you've got to be sharp, and you can't have base running gaffes, and you can't have defensive mistakes. And you just got to get a little lucky, and you can win both these games.
All right. I believe. I also believe you have no excuse to not do lunch over at Corner Pocket today, everybody. The game's now going to start at 3 o'clock. Lunch special today runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., as it does every single day over at the CP.
Bill should push that back, right, to like 3:30 or 4.
Probably, because there's a game before them, right? And if that doesn't go on time.
I'm just saying, like, you don't want your lunch special to end right when the game is starting. You should push it back to at least like the second inning. Bill, if you're listening, and I know you are, buddy, have your lunch special go from 11 to 4.
All right, there you go. Lunch special on Wednesday, 5-piece chicken wings and french fries, $8.99. Go do it. CPTallyBar.com if you want to get a look at the menu before you walk into the establishment. If you're one of those kind of people, no judgment. And don't forget, tomorrow is bingo night over at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Always a great time. CPTallyBar.com. On the way out, Corey, I don't have a lot to add when it comes to the ACC-FSU lawsuit, despite the fact that I was out there for like 8 mind-numbing hours. All I know is that they got the 3 of the motions in this request for dismissal, and all 3 of them were denied. So it's
good news for Florida State, right?
Correct. Yeah, the ACC wants the court case dismissed, and Florida State's like, no, we want to leave. And all 3 of the motions were dismissed, which favor Florida State. So they're not done, though. There's plenty more left on the bone on this one. They were going to maybe reconvene and do a Friday Zoom, but they're going to do it on paper, which I guess like the defense.
A paper Zoom.
Yeah.
You don't see that very often.
No,
nice.
on paper. So I guess they're just going to do it like via email pretty much.
Or fax.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and do that. So no timeline on when that's going to end up matriculating to the desk of Judge Cooper, but I thought all in all, like, that was my first time being at one of those, and I heard that like some of the ACC lawyers were a bit more impressive in the couple opening ones, but when I was there, I think his name is Rush, his last name, the attorney that was representing Florida State. I thought he did considerably better. I thought he was much more of a pit bull, ready, sharp, like on message with every single thing. A lot of hemming and hawing, looking behind their shoulders on the ACC side, trying to figure out, like, let me ask this person. One of the sort of burning, stinging parts, I thought, was when the judge was like, you know, what's this whole exit fee has to be three times the operating revenue. Like, do you know what the operating revenue is? And they're like, well, is it like $45 million? Because you say it's three times that and it's going to be $140 million or whatever to get out. And he's like, about north of that. And he's like, well, what makes up for it? Is it the legal costs? I'm sure legal costs factor into it. And the ACC attorney's like, well, you know, not because of us, no part to the ACC. And then the judge's like, well, don't you guys have a lawsuit up in North Carolina? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. It was getting a little combative there at the end. The judge getting a little cranky and stuff, but a good day for Florida State. I don't know how much closer they are to leaving the conference, but certainly they do want to leave the conference. The judge wants them to all go to mediation because there's just so much. I mean, it's eating an 800-pound elephant or whatever, one bite at a time, and that's just not fun. But
I don't think an 800-pound elephant is that heavy, right? Aren't they a lot bigger than that? Are gorillas 800 pounds?
That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
But that seems way too much for a gorilla.
Well, that's the whole point, right?
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to look up how much gorillas weigh because they can't weigh 800 pounds, right?
Yeah. They're like maybe 6 foot tall. They're not that much more jacked than, say, Jackson.
Adult males weigh an average of 300 pounds.
All right.
And can get up to 500 pounds. Ooh. And they stand about 6 feet tall.
There we go.
So they're like a lineman.
Yeah.
But they could rip all your limbs off
Bryson
your body
Estes.
And eat them.
Bryson Estes. Kind
they're of like, yeah, they're like a Bryson Estes. Yeah. Good call.
But yeah, then he asked him, so what's the operating budget? How do you guys figure it out? He's like, what's the breakdown? And even the ACC people are like, on a granular level, yeah, we don't know. And it's like, how do you not know that?
Yeah, anyhow. You've only been doing this for 8 months. Could you theoretically, because gorillas are smart, could you train one to be an offensive lineman?
No. Nope.
Why? What's the rule? Show me in the rule book where you can't put a gorilla
well,
in a
can't
uniform.
Trust him. Look at Harambe, man. Harambe almost killed that kid.
Well, the kid wasn't where he was in RIP, but the kid wasn't where he was supposed to be. I'm talking about he wasn't trained.
What you do you can take, in the zoo? What do you think else he was doing? They're just letting him do whatever he wants in the
but
zoo.
But he wasn't like trained to handle little boys. He was trained to like I don't know, eat lettuce or something, and juggle. But he wasn't trained to handle little boys, so he freaked out. If you trained a gorilla, because they're really smart. I just saw something on Twitter about this, and who knows if it's true or not. But this gorilla got really sad when he heard Robin Williams died because they had a friendship. 10 years ago, when I don't know a movie Robin Williams did with monkeys, but he did one. But anyway, if you could train a gorilla to put on a helmet and football pads, I don't even know if he'd need those. There's no and he stays on side. What's the rule against it, Aslan? Is there anything in the rule book? Do you think right now in the NCAA rule book that says you have to be a human being? You have to be a Homo sapien. I bet there isn't, right?
I don't know, man. I don't think we pay Alex Atkins enough to have to train a gorilla to get down in the stance and figure out DJ Uiagalelei's cadence. How awesome would that be if the gorilla jumped off sides, though, right?
Like, and then all his, the whole team is getting mad at him.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't get too mad at him.
Yeah. Goes up to the ref.
We don't want Jim to get too upset with us because he'll start ripping our arms off. So cool it. Hey, don't yell at him. But, yeah, I'd say, I mean, I don't know. It seems like some forward-thinking coach would have tried that at some point.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Hey, on the way out, though, let's talk real quickly about our top 40.
I guess the issue would be the defense. The opposing team might refuse to take the field, right? Because they don't trust that gorilla. Yeah, I agree 100%. But, you brought up Harambe. These kids remember that. So they might refuse to take the field. So, anyway, go ahead, top 40.
16 through 20, is that how it breaks down?
Yep.
Let's get to the overall list. Morlock, 20th. Sione Lolahea, 19th. Ja'Kai Douglas, 18th. Hakeem, 17th. Roydell Williams, 16th. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. You and me, I don't know how many we had. I don't think we had a lot of those guys in that segment right there. What do you think about that, Corey? What does that say when you're kind of on the cusp of your starting 22? Well, you are. You're within your starting 22 there, Azza.
Yeah.
Do the math. When you got a transfer from Alabama, a freshman that has a sophomore, and Hakeem Williams that's got vast potential but hasn't really done a lot, Ja'Kai Douglas, that I think we all feel really good about. Sione Lolahea, accomplished elsewhere, and then Kyle Morlock, just a bunch of potential. Thoughts on what that means for the future, as always, Corey?
Yeah, I think with the other four, and I wrote it. I wrote the story on the website, so I feel like I've dialed into this one. I think with the other four, you kind of know what you're getting. Roydell is not Trey Benson, but he's a guy that can probably rush for 50 yards a game, probably score a touchdown every other game, and get you some tough yards. It gets you some and have some big plays. He's a physical back. He's 225 pounds. He ain't the breakaway guy that Benson was, but he's a good. He's going to be a good college running back. And then you know what you got with Ja'Kai Douglas. Guy, you hope he stays healthy because this could be, even though he's been here for 5 years now, the breakout year for Ja'Kai. And by a breakout, I mean, I don't know, man, 40 catches for 590 yards, you know, something like that. He's like 46 catches in his career. There's a chance he could equal that this year. He probably won't, but there's a chance. But you know what you're getting with these guys. You know what you're getting with Morlock, I think. You know what you're getting with Lolahea. He was a second-team All-Pac-12 performer last year. He's probably going to be your third defensive end, but he's going to play a ton, and he's a big physical. He's a grown man on the edge. The one guy, right, the one guy that I wrote about is, like, this guy could be, when we look back in December, he could be a guy that should have been off the list completely, or he could be a guy that should have been top five. Mm. Like, that literally is the spectrum when it comes to Hakeem Williams.
Yep.
That's why he is where he is, because think about how important it would be to the success of the 2024 football team if Hakeem Williams not only became a starter, but a star, because it's in there. And if now you have Malik Benson, who we both think is an NFL player, and then Hakeem Williams turns into what we think could be an NFL wide receiver, NFL caliber wide receiver. Well, now you're doing some things, right? Now you've got yourself all of a sudden, okay, it's not that big a drop off from last year to this year. That's how important Hakeem could be. He's not there yet. He was not there in the spring. Now, again, he was coming back from an injury that he suffered at the end of last season. We saw the potential. Not just in the Syracuse game where he had the 44-yard touchdown, but we're lucky enough, but you and I saw it in practice. He was really starting to come on. He was looking like a legitimate, okay, this guy's in the rotation. He's physical. He's a good blocker. He's faster than any of us thought. He's in great shape. Like, we saw all that coming together, and then he got hurt, unfortunately. So it's almost like he has to reset again. But if he could take the same leap he took from last spring into last fall, if he can do that from this spring into this fall, you might just have yourself a star wide receiver. So, again, or he might just be behind five or six other guys. It might not click. I think it's going to click, but it might not. So, I think his variance might be the biggest one on the entire team. Like, literally, we could look back at this after the ACC championship game and be like, what were we thinking? And we could mean it two different ways.
Yeah.
We could mean it like, why did I have him 13th? And then or 17th or whatever he ended up being. And the other way could be like, I can't believe we had him 17th when he should have been 4th or 2nd. Like, that's where the fluctuation is with him. He has a chance. He hadn't proven it, but he has a chance to be a pretty special college wide receiver.
Well said. Again, Morlock 20th, Lolahea 19th, Ja'Kai 18th, Hakeem 17th, Roydell 16th. If you're wondering what it looked like last year, everybody, Corey as well. Bless Harris was 20th, Fentrell Cypress was 19th, Braden Fisk 18th, Joshua Farmer 17th, Maurice Smith 16th.
Okay.
So maybe not that far off in terms of like what you projected guys out to be and you know, I don't know
what
if anybody.
Was, so
I don't,
what
know if any,
would you,
I don't think any. Actually, no. Hakeem has a chance to be just as impactful as Braden Fisk.
That's
did.
What I was going to say. Yeah. What would you think Fisk was at the end of the year? If we did the top 40 at the end of the year,
oh man,
would he have been fourth?
Close. Yeah, I mean, he would have been like top seven. I feel like. I mean, you and I had him seventh on our list preseason.
But
and
I'm
that
saying,
was
it, just in the War Chant top 40, if we did a post
right.
ACC championship game, I think it's Verse, Travis, Keon. And then Trey and Fisk are fighting it out for 4 and 5.
Probably.
So,
yeah.
Again, I think if you're looking for somebody from this pocket of guys from 16 to 20, well, last year you saw a guy that we had 18th that ended up being one of the top five players on the team and a second-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. Maybe it happens again in the form of a wide receiver from South Florida.
Excited to find out. Football season not too far away, but baseball season still ongoing. Florida State in action. 3:00 Eastern time, taking on Tennessee, elimination game for the Noles. Vols still got one up their sleeve they can use if needed. But they don't want to. They don't want the smoke, Corey. They don't want to have to deal with all that. We'll be back with another show tomorrow, obviously wrapping up what we hope will be another victory on the diamond, but also the Renegade Express mailbag featuring generating discussions sparked by Cummins. So hop over to warchant.com's tribal council, get your questions in. Best one enters a monthly drawing to win a swag bag, free gear from our great friends over at Cummins. And then obviously an entry into the grand prize drawing at the end of the year for a portable generator or portable power station, winner's choice. Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. Plenty more over on warchant.com. Irish O'Fell still in Omaha, cranking out content. Go check it all out. For Corey, I'm Aslan. Thanks for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy.